Hi, I'm Matt Sorensen, CMO at Clearbit.
And I'm Alex McCaw, CEO of Clearbit.
And you're listening to the Manager's Handbook podcast.
Here at Clearbit, we've been writing a book on management as part of our internal training program with a goal of developing world-class managers.
The handbook brings together what's worked for us over the past 5 years and everything we've learned from our failures.
Each month, we'll be releasing a new episode of the pod, along with a written chapter of the handbook. You can find this all at themanagershandbook.com.
I'm your host, Matt Sorensen, and joining me today from Whangapua, New Zealand, is Alex McCaw, Clearbit CEO.
It's great to be here.
This is Chapter 5 in the Manager's Handbook podcast, Creating Clarity. Alex, this chapter has been one of the hardest for us to write and really to get right at Clearbit. Why do you think that is?
Well, this chapter is all about OKRs and what we call the Pyramid of Clarity, which is our own twist on OKRs. And we've had lots of struggles with OKRs internally. I think a lot of companies do. The first is actually coming up with good objectives. The second is measuring those objectives is very difficult. And the third is like, this is just really hard. It takes a lot of upfront work. It takes a lot of buy-in. And we've actually gone through various iterations of the system to find one that really works for us today.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to repeat that a little bit, as I've seen it, is picking the right metrics is really hard. Picking the right objectives is even harder when the whole company needs to get behind and the whole company needs to know why their work impacts that objective. And then just, you know, behavior change, getting people to think about all of their projects through the lens of KRs and then update their progress on a regular basis. All of those things together have meant that, like you said, we've gone through 3, 4, 5 iterations of this over the last 3 years to get where we are today.
Well, I think what we didn't realize at the start was that clarity and communication and planning are actually kind of the same problem. We ran into this issue where we had a lot of intra-team conflict, communication breakdown, and we were trying to figure out how to solve it. And we went to one of our early investors, this guy called Kenny Van Zandt, who essentially built Asana. And he told us, actually, if you've got a communication problem, you've got a planning problem. And then he proceeded to take us through Asana's Pyramid of Clarity, which is what they use for planning.
So that's really interesting. If you have a communication problem, you have a planning problem. What did Kenny mean by that?
He means that if you plan well, then the communication resolves itself. Often when people have problem communicating, what they actually lacked is clarity.
And what I took from that is the understanding of the plan. So when people feel like they're not being communicated with, especially cross-functionally, it's because they don't understand the plan or the why behind what the other team might be working on.
That's right. So there's this quote I like from this. The First Round Capital did an amazing article about this. And the quote goes like this. When people don't know the order of operations, you get confusion, tension, drama. People get territorial because someone is already doing what they think they should be doing. And all you see are emails and meetings asking the same question over and over. What are you working on this week?
The status update meeting is a signal that there is not clarity with what the different teams are working on. And so in our conversation with Kenny, I remember him talking pretty explicitly. I know Asana has written a bunch about this and we'll link out in the chapter itself, but that there are 6 questions that everyone should be able to answer in order for them to have clarity.
Yeah. So these are, what are you working on right now? Are you confident that it's the most important thing you could be doing? Do you know who's waiting on you? Do you know to whom you can go for support? Do you know how your work fits into the overarching product we're trying to create? And do you know why that product matters? So those are the 6 questions. And if people can answer all 6, then they have clarity.
And Asana's method for creating this clarity is really based on the OKR system, but they've kind of coined this phrase, the Pyramid of Clarity, which we've adopted here at Clearbit and have started really rolling out over the last 2 quarters.
Yeah, and I actually really like the system. Because A, it's a little simpler than classical OKR systems, and B, it integrates a wider mission and strategies. And so really everyone can see how the work that they're doing is affecting their overall mission.
Yeah, I think that's actually the most important part of all of the planning process, period, is can every individual point to how is the work that I'm doing today impacting our overall company's goals? And there's a quote from Asana I want to read here just because it works for my brain. The pyramid of clarity shows how our longer-term aspirations are built on top of shorter-term goals, whether they're building a product roadmap or business plan. We regularly refer back to the pyramid of clarity to help us stay on the same page, build confidence in our strategy and execution, and then help individuals to make decisions that are in line with the big picture. It's a big quote, but it really encapsulates it well for me.
So let's dive into what the pyramid of clarity actually means. Imagine in your mind a pyramid, and at the top of this pyramid, you have your mission. So this is why you get out of bed in the morning. Good missions are short, clear, can be stitched on a pillow. And then they're generally pretty high level, but not too high level. They shouldn't be able to describe every company.
What would you say a good litmus test for a great mission is?
If with one sentence, someone has a really good idea of what area you work on or like why you get out of bed in the morning. Like, I really like Stripe's one, which is increase the GDP of the internet.
So at the very top of our pyramid here, we have the mission. What's the next level down?
So underneath the mission are the strategies. And you might have three or four strategies. But if your mission is why you are doing what you're doing, a strategy is how you're going to go about it.
So this is the ways in which we will achieve the mission, the way that we'll make the mission true.
That's right. And Asana's ones are quite interesting. So their strategy is threefold. Number one, go build the best product in work management. Two, generate enough revenue to sustain the business and attract high quality stakeholders. And three, build the best team.
And let's list off what Clearbits here are as well. And our first strategy is to focus on our ideal customer profile. Number two, to build measurable impact for our customers by building the next generation of marketing tools, to be a self-growth vehicle for everyone on our team, and to continuously improve economics to build a business capable of growth in both times of plenty, in times of boom, and times of bust. I think it's worth noting that those have changed a little bit in the last 8 weeks.
Yeah, generally speaking, your strategies are going to last a year, if not longer, due to obvious reasons, world economic collapse and COVID. We've had to revamp a few of ours, but that's the idea, is that they're meant to stay fairly consistent.
Exactly. But they should change when the world asks you to. All right, so we're two levels down on this beautiful pyramid of clarity. What comes below strategies?
So underneath your four strategies are your objectives. And you might have quite a lot of these. I think Asana have upwards of 30, 40, 50 of these because, you know, they're quite a big company. We have 13 this quarter. And generally, these would last the whole year as well. But like the strategies, yeah, you should revise them when you need to. So the objectives are essentially goals that serve the strategies and mission. So if you achieve these goals, then you'll further your strategy and ultimately further your mission.
I think one thing that's interesting to point out about the pyramid of clarity here as well is, unlike a traditional or classical OKR system, there is not nested objectives. Your company level objectives, you have a flat list and you'll have more than the three to four that you might have in a classical OKR system at that top level, but there's only one level of objectives.
Yeah, we've just found it gets too complicated having a hierarchy of objectives. So we decided to keep it flat, same way that Asana has done it. Otherwise, you'll find that objectives get hidden. You know, they're on some far down branch of this tree, and they don't get enough visibility. So keeping it flat helps prevent that.
Yeah, it's worked really, really, really well for us as a simpler way.
So let's talk about an example objective. So one might be hit revenue objectives while maintaining cash balance. And generally, with objectives, they're not quantifiable. That's where the key results come in. Sometimes we will also bend the rules here. So we'll generally have a quantifiable revenue objective that's top level, and then the rest of the objectives are not quantifiable.
Yeah, absolutely. And general objectives would be this big, ambitious thing that we're going after, but we will absolutely put numbers in them for specific types of objectives, specifically revenue and retention.
And so typically they're achievable within the year. Right now, I think our objectives are quarter by quarter. Is that right, Matt?
Yep, we'll look at them each quarter. We expect many of them to stay the same quarter over quarter, though.
And like I said, there's quite a lot of them. And then who owns them? Well, generally, they're owned by an executive. They're not specific to one business area. They're cross-functional. And so an executive needs to own them.
Yeah, I think ownership is a really important piece. And where ownership becomes the most obvious is in key results, which is that next level down here. So talk us through how we think about key results.
Right. So we've gone from mission, strategies, objectives, and now we're at key results. And we're almost at the bottom of the pyramid. So key results, these are quantifiable and generally best as an integer rather than a true false Boolean, which is a concept of progress over time. But they are an objective metric that a third party should be able to adjudicate as to progress against the objective that the key result is owned by.
So a good example of an objective might be to increase adoption across one of Clearbit's newest products. What would the key results for that be?
Well, there's a few ways of recording adoption. For example, NPS might be one of those. So a key result might be trying to reach a certain NPS score. And if you've already got a bar there, then the best kind of objective is like from this number to this number. So people can see what the diff is you're trying to get reach.
Yep, absolutely. And other things could be as simple as this many new customers using the product, this many new people in the beta. Something that you pointed out that has a baseline and that you can measure progress on week over week throughout the quarter.
Right. And so who owns the key result, Matt?
Key results can also be owned by executives, but more often are owned by the individual team lead that's responsible for the initiatives that drive towards that key result.
And the only reason why you get an executive owning a key result is if the key result's not totally under the control of a team. If it relies on other teams to a great degree, then it's not really appropriate to put it under control of a team who can't influence it 100%.
Yep. Functional leaders should own KRs that they have almost full control over the success or failure of that KR.
And then executives are tasked, well, A, they have a bit more influence over the rest of the organization, and B, it's kind of their job to have a bit more uncertainty and to take ownership of things that they don't totally control.
Awesome. Well, in chapter 5 on themanagershandbook.com, you can see the full Asana Pyramid of Clarity, as well as Clearbit's version of the Pyramid of Clarity, our own mission, strategies, and objectives. We won't spend time diving into those today, but please check them out at themanagershandbook.com. So one question I have, and I know it's something that we've struggled with, what do you think the best way for a company to record all of this is? How does the actual functionality of the Pyramid of Clarity work?
Well, we've tried a lot of different systems. I'm not sure we can definitively say we have the best answer. Yeah, if you look at how Google does their OKR systems, they built an internal tool. And some of the teams just use Google Docs, actually. So it's a mismatch. We use Asana, as you might imagine, to track all this stuff. I think it works really well. We use it as a task management system for the rest of the company as well. So it actually fits neatly into that.
Yeah, I mean, we've tried a lot of things. We've tried Docs, we've tried systems like Lattice and Purdue, and all of them have their pros and cons. The most important thing, it turned out for us, was a visible place where the whole company can see everyone's together, track progress, we can identify hotspots. And because we do literally almost all of our internal project management and a lot of our communication in Asana, it was the logical place for us to do this.
Yeah. And one of our big learnings has been visibility, you know, not just in terms of the tool you use, having your objective hidden under some hierarchy of a tree is an issue, but also in terms of visibility to the company revisiting these objectives and shining light into some of the ones that are not going so well. And so one of the biggest changes we've made recently is at every all hands now, we revisit the OKRs, and we kind of tie whatever we're talking about in the all hands back to that OKR.
Yeah, one of our misses early on was absolutely having a lot of planning and a lot of work going into creating these perfect OKRs, perfect pyramid of clarity, and then looking at it at the beginning of the quarter and at the end of the quarter and not really using it as an accountability tool. So you have a saying that you say quite often to the point of being a little annoying sometimes, creativity is not an assembly line. How does that play with this whole concept of the pyramid of clarity?
Well, it really plays into the concept of delegation and task setting. So great managers set goals, not tasks. And that's because you're dealing with creative types generally in a company. and especially on the product side. And so if you set them tasks every day, then I can tell you they're not going to be wanting to work at your company for very long. Getting too much direction for a creative is like overwatering your plants. It'll suffocate them. they like to know what the end goal is, why that goal is important, and then they like to figure out how to get there.
Absolutely. And when we prescribe tasks, we are setting ourselves up to micromanage, not to enable and coach.
Right. And it's not just about appeasing your team. If you've hired well, then you should really take advantage of wisdom of the crowds. So your team should be making good, if not better, decisions than you.
So that actually is a really interesting point. There are decisions that are big enough and that the manager is going to have the most context for in making that decision. So you mentioned before that managers set goals, not tasks. However, what do you do in the case where someone has no experience? And I'm leading you here to this concept of task-relevant maturity.
Right. So task-relevant maturity is a framework for deciding what to delegate and what not to delegate. And it really depends on your level of conviction. You know how something should be done, or you know how a decision should be made, and the consequence of that. So if it's a low consequence decision or a high consequence decision. So those are the inputs to the framework. And the way you think about it is when your conviction is low and the consequence is low, then delegate the project fully. When your conviction is high and the consequence is low, delegate, but monitor closely. It's better to extend the rope and let your report gain experience. When the consequences are high, you either need to gather more data or overrule.
And I think another way of talking about this and thinking about when to delegate and when not to delegate is something we talked about in chapter 4, which is type 1 and type 2 decisions. Essentially, type 1 being a two-way door, you can make the decision and walk back. Type 2, once you've made that decision, it's really hard to come back, which makes it much easier to know when to delegate and when not to delegate big decisions.
That's right. Yeah. With type one, you can't easily come back from it. So you should take a lot of time about making that decision. And then type two is reversible. So you can easily come back from it and you might as well make that decision quickly.
Awesome. We're coming to the close of this episode. I want to do some rapid fire managers myths. And these are just some common myths that we've seen many, many times that keep managers from capitalizing on their team's potential.
So there are these common myths that come up again and again, and we've written them down just to try and remind ourselves that these are indeed myths and to try and avoid them. So let me just list them out. First one is there's one best way. This is a myth that there's only one way and that you know it. And in reality, you should let your team figure out the best way. Certain roles don't require talent. That's another myth. I think every role does require talent to some degree.
Could you give me an example of a role where someone might think, you know, we don't need a talented person for this role?
Yeah, it could be data entry, or it could be a really simple task, or maybe something that you think is simple, but actually most people would find it pretty difficult.
Yeah, I think my favorite one here is always like support. There is an incredible difference between someone who is great at support and someone that doesn't have a gift for it.
Yeah, that's a great example for sure. All right, another manager myth, trust must be earned. And really, trust should largely be given by default because you vetted your team up front prior to them joining the company. There's been a significant vetting process during the hiring process. So you default to trust. You don't default to complete trust and delegate everything, but you default to a lot of trust.
Absolutely. And I think when you can verify progress with clear goals and clear metrics, it gets even easier to do that. And I think there's a really important thing here is that trust begets trust. When we give people trust, they often earn more of it very, very quickly. And that's not always true. There's going to be times where that's not true. But we've found starting with trust is so much more effective than starting with a lack of trust and forcing people to try to earn it.
And then the last manager myth we're going to talk about is some outcomes cannot be defined. This is the I don't like my targets being measured excuse. Essentially, going back to the fact that people don't like accountability. And we've typically seen this excuse, we've seen it across the company, but often in product and engineering orgs who feel like some aspects of their work cannot be quantified, tracked, and measured. But generally, when we dig in, we find that actually you can do that and you should do that.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as you can define a clear outcome, then you can absolutely metric how we get there. Okay, well, that takes us to the end of this month's podcast. We're slightly off on our monthly release schedule due to the pandemic and 2020 being one hell of a year. We'll do our best to keep them coming month after month here. And thank you so much for coming along on this journey with us. Tune in next month for the next chapter of the Manager's Handbook podcast. This podcast is being recorded at Studio Pod SF. For more information, go to studiopodsf.com. Thank you for listening.